When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Our sponsor today is Amazon.com. As you may know, they started out selling books, and now you can buy almost anything from DVDs to a 4-slice toaster. But did you know that Amazon also sells collectibles, including memorabilia and fine art? Well, there are over 15 million listings for memorabilia, featuring sports items, rare comic books, autographs from the stars and creators of TV shows and movies, coins, paintings, and much, much more. If you're a serious collector, Amazon focuses on authenticated autographs and gradings from CGC, PSA, PCGS, NGC, and the U.S. Mint, among others. And if you are a collector, you know what that means. You'll even get free shipping on select items. So check out the range of possibilities at Amazon.com/Nerdist and see what strikes your fancy. Right now you'll find a Captain America shield signed by the man who plays him on screen, Chris Evans. That's Amazon.com/Nerdist. And we thank them for their support of Malton on Movies.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Malton on Movies. I'm Leonard Malton.
And I'm Jesse Malton.
And we're here with the wonderful Laura Dern. And Laura, I looked something up today that frightened the hell out of me.
Uh-oh.
I hope it doesn't frighten you. I met you more than 30 years ago.
I mean,
holy moly.
Holy moly.
It was at the Mill Valley Film Festival, and you were there with a film called Smooth Talk.
Yep.
Which was which got you a lot of notice. The film itself got a lot of attention, but it got you a lot of attention, and it was kind of, I mean, you'd made Mask. I mean, it's not like you hadn't worked before, but this is sort of a coming out party for you, wasn't it?
Very much, and I remember it so well,
mm-hmm.
and the privilege of meeting you
as
such an admirer of yours, mm-hmm. even then. Because my parents had trained me well to know there were a few people who, you know, I remember actually my mom saying to me that what she loved about you and that there were only a few of you like this, because actually it's when I met Sheila Benson for the first time,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
And she said they really believe in film criticism. And she was like, you know, Laura, when film critics started at the New York Times, the idea was a group of critics would come together and the person who understood the movie the most or loved the movie the most would be the critic of that film, not the person who was going to necessarily tear it apart, because it was the art of loving film.
Oh, yeah.
So I was raised in that belief system. So I was very, very excited to meet you. And it was a really big moment for me, I think, mostly because it was the first lead in a movie I had done, and it was made, produced by Lindsay Laud, American Playhouse,
mm-hmm.
for a small budget, and I got the fever of what it's like to be part of a piece of art,
mm-hmm.
where people come together for no money, you have a very limited budget, and it's truly what independent film looked like. And so mm-hmm. I think that really taught me the kind of films I wanted to work on and with the kinds of filmmakers I wanted to work with, Joyce Chopra being the director of that film.
Right, and a great pedigree, a Joyce Carol Oates story,
yeah.
you know, all of that, all the way down the line. So you obviously abandoned that because, oh no, wait a minute, you're in another one of those right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Certain Women.
See?
Another film.
Once you stay committed.
There yeah. it is. I mean, you're good to your word. I'm a big fan of Kelly Reichardt's work.
Me too.
And I'm going to spell her name so people know who I'm talking about. It's Kelly, R-E-C-I-H-A-R-D-T, Kelly Reichardt. And if you haven't seen, like, Wendy and Lucy or any of her films are all very – or Meek's Cutoff.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Oh, man.
Michelle Williams fell in love with her, working with her on Wendy and Lucy, and then she came back from Meek's Cut Off. Everyone who works with her seems to want to work with her again.
Yeah.
So now here, a whole bunch of you, I mean, you all have great parts. How would you describe certain women? How would you describe your part? It's an episodic film. How would you describe it to people?
Well, it's interesting because it's so unusual to be part of storytelling where the stories don't necessarily cross paths.
Yeah.
You know, so... And nor did Kelly want to put words to what it meant necessarily mm-hmm. as we worked on it. So it was only when I saw the movie that I thought, for me as an audience, that the journey of each of these women in their three different stories is about being seen in a way in a man's world.
Yeah. Certainly, your character is dealing with that.
Yeah, and in this funny way, like Michelle, her character, I mean, Kristen's character is dealing with the Board of Education and, mm-hmm. and how the system works. Mm-hmm. But Michelle,
that's Kristen Stewart,
Stewart, and Michelle Williams' character is dealing with the question of negotiating mm-hmm. with a husband and negotiating with this mm-hmm. elderly gentleman played so beautiful by Rene Auberjonois.
Yeah,
he's
what a treat
a great
to
actor.
See him. Yeah.
I know. And so I like that she's just really considering women trying to find their voice separate from what even they think will help them get away with it. I mean, I think that we can say we're feminists all day long, but we project what we think is going to be palatable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's by being a typical guy in a boardroom, our idea of, you know, the tough cookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as we've seen in this election, projections on women are fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really didn't consider even the sexism I have about how women should handle certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so I think Kelly,
you know,
we're
products of our society. We're products of what we're raised with, and what I'm not going to say that dreadful word, media. But what the culture, mm-hmm. what the culture sort of inculcates in our brains and in our. You know,
he's been waiting to use that word.
I mean,
for
it's so
37
impressive.
Years,
yeah.
He finally found the right spot to just
yeah.
put it in.
Know what it means?
Anyway, what they pound into our brains mm-hmm. and our psyches, and it is fascinating. It is just fascinating.
It's funny though you say that because a movie we were talking about of yours that we both love is the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio.
Oh yeah,
which is similar in that it's all about your place. And what women can do, should do, all of that. And I love that movie.
I do, too.
I
yeah.
love that movie.
This is a film we recommend all the time. Folks, if you haven't heard, it's called The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio. It's based on a best-selling book by a woman named Terry Ryan, who wrote it about growing up with her mother, a remarkable woman. This is not spoiler stuff. I'm just giving you the premise.
He always says that.
Well, I don't want anybody to think I'm giving it away. But it's about a woman who back in the 50s, late 40s and into the 50s, did very well by her very large family
mm-hmm.
by entering slogan contests, which were all the rage back then. Not sweepstakes, slogan contests where you had to use your creativity and ingenuity. And she won all these prizes that helped feed, house, and help her family.
Cars, all kinds of things, because her husband was not making any money.
Yeah.
And so she really became, she became the breadwinner by doing these.
Yeah.
But still, but at the same time, had to still be a mom and a wife and was getting no respect for doing what she was doing.
Yeah.
And she really loved it. Because she's so bright, she really loved doing this as much as it became necessary. She liked coming up with it.
So it's a very interesting film because it works.
And it's played by a really an awful actress. It's played by
Julianne Moore is just
who
perfect.
Can't do anything right. I mean,
Julianne Moore is perfect in it, and Woody Harrelson plays her ne'er-do-well husband.
Yeah. He's amazing too.
Yes.
And Jane Anderson directed it. I think adapted the screenplay.
Yeah.
And so it's told sort of on two levels. of awareness from a modern set of eyes and a vintage set of eyes telling the same story.
Beautiful.
And really well done. And what we love to do is we love on our podcast here to recommend movies that people might not know. And that's an example of a sleeper that sort of slipped through the cracks.
Yeah. Nice.
But it's so worth your time, and it's just such a good film. I saw it by accident. My dad had told me about it, but it was just on TV one day. And when I see your name and when I see Julianne Moore, I go, well, all right. And then you throw in Woody Harrelson. I say, yes, yes, please. And I watched it and immediately went to my dad and said, this movie is so good. And we so enjoyed talking about it.
Oh,
it's one of those two where I think it's a really great movie to talk about.
Yeah.
And so many people don't know anything about that history, about all of that went on.
And I had an aunt, a great aunt, who was one of those contest entrants.
Really? Oh,
she used to do it all the time. She wrote little jingles and things and filled in the last word of a stanza, you know, for Brillo or for Tide detergent or whatever product it was. Oh, yeah. So I had a little acquaintance with that. Which rang a distant gong in my childhood memory. And speaking of childhoods, one of the things we did want to talk to you about is what do you think you take with you or took with you from hanging around with your mom on movie sets? Now, you did not have a conventional childhood in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. I mean, you moved a number of times. And your mother, Diane Ladd, we should name her, Diane Ladd, wonderful actress, was very busy, and she would take you along.
Yeah, so lucky for me. Well, I've got to say the thing that I probably have learned the most from both my parents is their not only professionalism, but more specifically their movie set etiquette.
Mm. Oh, yes.
And they are very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
They are incredibly embracing. They come from a time on a movie set in the 70s when I was lucky enough to watch them both working, that every single person on that movie is of equal value to the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I watch them, you know, sit on an apple box and listen to stories or watch the shot set up. They're not big on sort of leaving set to go to their trailer and wait till camera's ready for them as though they're of more importance or something.
Right.
And that really stuck with me. I think that's made a big impact on me, as well as filmmakers that I've worked with. I'm going to sneeze. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Filmmakers I've worked with who also kind of gather their tribe, like Robert Altman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now Paul Thomas Anderson works very much like Bob, and Jonathan Demme works that way, that they amass their tribe to tell this story.
Yeah.
And you're a family.
Yeah.
And that's just a beautiful way to work and collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the second thing that really equally stands out is that I happened to be raised by two incredibly brave actors was around a generation of actors in terms of my parents' friends, my godmother, who was after Shelley Winters.
Yeah.
They believed in flawed protagonists and that their job was to reveal the pathos, the humanity in the most broken places and in the most broken people. They weren't interested in creating some sort of archetypal legend, be it, you know, the villain, the vixen, or the hero.
Sure.
They were interested in the gray and the mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why we all loved films of that era so much.
Sure.
And so that has really stuck with me in terms of, I think, the kinds of filmmakers I long to work with and the kinds of characters I now seem to really gravitate toward.
Well, it struck both Jesse and me. We thought it was just so sweet and so wonderful to watch you arm in arm accompanying your dad, Bruce Dern, during the journey of Alexander Payne's film Nebraska toward the awards season and up to his Oscar nomination.
It was so special in part because you've worked with Alexander in one of your best parts, one of the best films, Citizen Ruth, which we love. And you're just, you know, it's funny for me because I meet people as people. So I knew you separate of knowing what you did. And it's funny sometimes to then find out what these lovely people you're surrounded by can do and have done. So watching that movie where you are just crazed and wonderful and I, you know, I go, wow, look at that. Look what she did. And so, you know, to know that you worked with Alexander and had such a special experience in a film that you all still love. And we were talking about a little bit that everybody wants to stream now. But if
let me tell you
they
something.
Get the DVD.
If you get the DVD of Citizen Ruth, there's a wonderful commentary track that you and Alexander Payne and his writing partner Jim Taylor did. And you all sat down to watch the film 10 years after making it and recorded this conversation that I think is just wonderful.
And
illuminating and revealing for any film buff anyway. Illuminating for somebody who cares about movie making and good movie making.
Yes.
And you won't get that on the stream. You won't get that, on the download.
Get the old-fashioned DVD.
Get that piece of aluminum. Get that 5-inch piece of aluminum, and you'll be glad you did.
Yeah.
So you
work with Alexander, and then your dad does Nebraska with Alexander. And we always talk about him, both your dad and Mr. Payne, because we're such fans and admirers. But what a wonderful thing that you shared it with him,
that you went with
him everywhere. And we saw him in Santa Barbara at the film festival, and I went over and I said, you know, I've only been talking to Laura. I haven't really gotten to talk to you. And he starts cursing up a storm in the best way possible. And I was just like, can I have you? Can you become mine? Because I love you, sir. He's so much fun, and he reminded me so much of – I can see how you're a mixture of your parents. Because I don't think I've ever heard you curse, but
it's coming.
Yeah. You know, it just made me smile because I know how I feel when I'm with my dad.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of him, and I love getting to celebrate him with other people. So you getting to do that on such a beautiful grand scale, you know, it's very, very special to have that.
And to watch, I think, as our lives unfold and we've been doing what we do for so many years, to watch my dad really enjoy the moment really enjoy the celebration.
Yeah.
And that was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, I'll never forget, we were sitting together at the Academy Awards and he had a... He was trying to get a Coke. I'm like, Dad, you're not supposed to bring drinks into the awards show. And he was like, I got to get somebody. Hey, kid, can you get me a Coke? And it was Benedict Cumberbatch. He was like, I'll get you a Coke, Mr. Dunn. I'd love to get you a Coke. And so he brought my dad a Coke. And my dad was hiding his Coke underneath the chair. And he pulls out his Coke and he like takes a sip and he leans in and he goes, look at this, kid. All these people we admire got together to throw a dinner party, and they gave me a seat at the table.
Yeah.
And that was it for him. It wasn't about a contest or people winning or losing or how well a movie does on opening weekend.
Yeah.
It's just about celebrating art, and that was just a lovely thing to get to be.
Yeah.
Now, what happens? Do you ever find yourself, I mean, you have two children, so you have a busy life on top of your career. But do you ever find yourself channel surfing at all and stumbling upon your dad in an old TV episode or movie?
Yes. Well, first I just have to say, because it's stuck in my head, I thought you were going to say, do you ever find yourself split between both your parents? So in December, this last December, it is the premiere at the Cinerama Dome of Hateful Eight. And my dad asked me to go with him. And it's the premiere of David O. Russell's movie Joy. And my mother's in it and asked me to go with her.
I just can't explain to you how thrilled I was for them, how traumatized I was.
So they sat me next to Quentin, and I leaned into him. I was like, dude, I know this is a long movie, and I am leaving at the intermission because my mother will kill me. So I swear to God, in the next 24 hours, if I can go to tomorrow's screening, I will watch the second half so that I can walk with my mother into her movie because I can't – Not be there for both parents.
Wow, oh my of course.
But, I mean, and how gorgeous. They're working with amazing filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
The ultimate
of their life.
Dilemma.
If they really loved you, they'd check. They'd check ahead of time.
I mean, please. You know,
put a day between it.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
In fact, in terms of my life, yes, the juggle is immense. And that's what you were asking about, right? Is sort of with kids.
No. Well, we'll get to that too. But stumbling onto your father.
Oh, yes, right. Sorry.
Accidentally.
Yeah. So it hasn't happened recently as much, probably because I avoid television out of terror of what I might say.
That's fair.
But, you know, certainly over the years, I've come across, I mean, that's the greatest fun is when I've seen a Gunsmoke I never saw.
Sure.
Or my mom, I saw my mom and Richard Dreyfuss in a Bonanza episode, and she is, I think maybe a couple of years, she's about the exact same age as him, and in it, she's like 19, but playing his mom, and they've
oh my
aged
god,
her.
Oh,
it's so incredible!
Wow,
and
so funny
because they both did a lot of, I mean, as all working actors did in those days.
Yeah.
We're talking about mostly the '60s, episodic television, episodic film television, and if you don't know, I mean, today's shows limited series, 6 episodes, 8 episodes, no.
Yeah.
Bonanza, Gunsmoke, they did as many as 39 episodes a year for years after years after years. So there's hundreds and hundreds of these shows floating about, and they all have interesting casts.
Oh.
You can see the entire SAG roster.
Yes,
true.
Well, that's how I feel watching ER.
Yes,
I feel like if you weren't on ER, there had to be a reason.
I know, exactly.
Like something happened to you.
I know, and movie stars starred in television series then, and then there was this period where, like, you did one or you did the other.
Oh, no, you don't and stoop now, down to television.
Yeah. And now the lines are, thank God, blurred yet again.
And then you made a little bit of a splash with Ellen.
Oh, yeah.
You showed up on that episode of Ellen DeGeneres' show that made television
history.
And in some ways, social history.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely both.
Yeah.
Definitely both.
I mean, that was a big, big deal for someone who was, she still loved more than ever, I would say, today.
Yes, yes.
But she was already kind of a heroine to a lot of people, and she came out, her character came out on her show with you. And that was a big, big deal. Did you get, I mean, was the response tangible to you?
Well, it was a really interesting time because it was a particularly successful moment. I mean, I was doing well as an actor and Jurassic Park had just come out and so it was a very big kind of commercial time. And so it was there were eyes on me.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's an interesting thing. Like, do you do another huge action? Like, what's your next thing?
Of course.
And so to be given the privilege of supporting someone in her individual coming out and her characters coming out simultaneously was really amazing. And she and I shared in the last couple of years I did her show and we talked about it. We both got a lot of threat.
Wow.
And it was actually a very difficult time for about a year after doing it.
Wow.
And there were a lot of negative
comments. Somehow I guess it's my naivete that's not what I thought about when I was reminding myself that you had done it.
Well, and that's what's incredible that we're talking about 15 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah,
and now you would never question a gay character on television.
No.
Everywhere you turn.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it was
issue. There's always haters out there, as they call them.
Always.
You know,
he's so hip.
But
he's so hip with the lingo.
I like to go with the young kids' lingo.
I know
you know that.
I know you do.
Unless you're the object of it, you know.
You have no idea.
As you now learn, were.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so many more people, particularly in the last several years, come up. I mean, maybe as much as anything I've ever done to thank me.
Wow.
Sure.
And parents and grandparents saying, I my grandson, my nephew, my child was trying to come out, and I saw the show, and it really helped me open my heart and mind. And
what an impact.
That's all you need.
What an impact.
That's all you need for everything to be worth it.
Absolutely.
What an impact.
That's completely it.
Now, having said all that, you just brought up the dilemma of, you know, raising a family and all. Now, when you look back on your rather unconventional upbringing, and your parents were separated early on, right?
Two. I was two, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you had that to deal with as well. So what do you take from all that that you apply to raising of your children? And you're now a single mom and an active working actress.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be challenging on every level.
It is. I mean, I was really, I am really lucky to be a working woman now, mm-hmm. compared to my mother's generation even, because we're supported, well, unless our boss is
yes.
one particular fellow I'm
yes.
thinking of, but
yes.
but we're supported in bringing our child to the workplace
right.
and, you know, having to pump as yeah. was the thing that came into my mind.
Yeah, of course.
It's horrific to me. But, you know, and even some productions, if they have the budget, will support helping you, facilitating mm-hmm. you to bring a small child with you
sure.
and have mm-hmm. child care so that you can do your job. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
My mother didn't have that, but I had the blessing of my maternal grandmother, Mary, raised me my whole childhood. So she moved from Alabama and was here in L.A., and I had this parent, grandparent, constant
yeah.
that was just
great.
Everything for me. So I was
sure.
so lucky,
sure.
and my parents were so lucky. But, yeah, it's a different day, but it's still – it's so tricky because I liked being bold – mm-hmm. and not being commerce-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And now as a single parent, you think,
oh, yeah,
work as yeah. support. And,
everybody has to make a living.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
this is, you know, when I was a kid, I thought all movie stars lived some golden life in some, you know, Mount
yep.
Olympus type,
yep.
you know, reverie.
Know.
And didn't have to deal with the mundane issues of life,
yeah.
like paying the rent.
Yeah.
Well, that's not how it is, folks.
No.
You do have to pay the rent.
I mean, we live in Mount Olympus. It's just
yes, yeah, right. It's down the street. Exactly.
Yes.
It's down the street.
I was using
the
metaphoric
yes,
reference,
yes.
of course.
No. Oh, God.
But,
well,
yeah.
You know, it's funny because so Josh Hartnett, who has been in Penny Dreadful and done really well in that show, he was on Ellen recently.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation was because he has a child now, a little one, little bitty baby one. And he said, you know, I was always so picky about what I did. And now I'm just like, yes. What have you got? Yes. Whatever it is. Yes. You know, Brooke Shields has done a very similar, you know, she said, I don't care what it is. I will do it. I will do it because I have kids and they are expensive. And, you know, and I love that. I love the honesty of it.
I realize,
like,
by the
yes.
way, we should go back just half a turn here and just explain for our listeners who are not from Los Angeles that there is a development called Mount Olympus.
Yes.
That may have sailed over some people's heads.
Yes.
That when Laura said that,
yes.
it's a neighborhood.
And it is very near, yes, very near to where we are at present.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And very far
yes.
from the heavenly.
Yeah,
very, you know,
yeah, that's
yes,
which
right.
we're working our way towards.
Yes, right.
In beautiful,
we're all hoping,
in beautiful Hollywood,
hope to
California.
Work our way.
Yes.
We hope
yes.
to work our way to the
exactly.
other Mount Olympus
exactly.
someday.
But,
wouldn't that be nice?
You know, but also, please God, I'm knocking on wood. May we get the tax credit back in the state of California.
So we can film here.
Yeah.
That's the other
yes.
deep
sure.
tragedy. I'm not only for me, but so many
yeah.
friends who have kids is they're in Atlanta for 6 months. They're in London for 6 months.
Yeah,
they're,
that's got to be tough.
It's brutal.
That's got to be
you
tough.
Know, it always amazes me everything, all the choices that you have to make, the people don't think about. And for me growing up here, as you did, all your friends are actors. I was never an actor, and I'm grateful that that wasn't something I wanted because holy cow. But, you know, what you have to choose, what you have to go through, whether it's having your kids homeschooled because otherwise you have to take them out of school too often. You know, when they're young, you're all right.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as they become a little person, you know, with friends, You know, and the amount of conversations we've had because people meet us and it's a father and a daughter. People immediately, Mark Wahlberg the other day, that's a fun name drop. Mark Wahlberg the other day asked if I was a troublesome teenager and asked for advice because he's a 13-year-old daughter. His daughter just turned 13 and he was going on about, you know, he's like, I don't know what to do. She and her mother won't stop fighting. And I'm just stood there like, this is the conversation I'm having with Mark Wahlberg. Okay. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I was really boring. Which is true. I was so bored. I didn't have a curfew. I didn't have anything. I was just dull. But I was a theater nerd and an art nerd. It, you know, I didn't do anything.
But it
is something as a parent. You want the best for your kids.
Yeah.
You want the best for your kids and you want to give them a happy and healthy childhood. Mm-hmm. But part of that, too, is you doing what you love.
Yeah.
And showing them that it's important to be passionate.
I'm going to do a segue. I'm going to do a nerdy film buffy segue here.
I like it.
If I were raising an adolescent right now, as I was with my wife, Alice, and I wanted to take them to a movie that would inspire them and make them feel good and maybe leave them something, I take them to see October Sky. What we did.
Yeah.
When that movie came out in 1999, we saw October Sky and we fell in love
with that
movie.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Aww.
And again, you have such a perfect part, part in that film.
You play this idealized school teacher, the kind we all wish we had. And I had one or two.
Homer Hickam, who the story is based on, was his teacher. And he said she was, you know, as magical and lovely and generous to him as they wrote.
Yeah. That's the first time a lot of people saw Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, his first feature.
And he's...
Now, did you see something special in him?
I did. And I knew his parents and had met him. I mean, we're not so much... Our age difference isn't dramatic, but when you're 16 and the other person's 21, it's massive.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So, but I clearly saw that he was, you know, deeply instinctual, natural, beautiful actor. Mm. He's shown so much shadow and rawness.
Oh, God.
Yes. So many performances in the last 5 years.
Very gutsy, hasn't he?
But there I saw a very tender,
beautiful
boy. And if you don't know that film, October Sky is the true story of a man named Homer Hickam Jr. who grew up in the 50s in coal mining country. Mm. And Chris Cooper gives a great performance as his father. And it's all that's expected of him is to follow his dad and everyone else in the town into the mine.
Into the mine, regardless of what you like or want.
But then the Russians launched their satellite Sputnik. And this fires his imagination about rocketry. And it's all he cares about. It's all he wants to do. And it's a true story about somebody who, spoiler alert, wound up going into rocketry.
Yeah.
For NASA.
Yeah.
And it's a memoir. But it's beautifully told. And Joe Johnson did a great job directing that. And it's just a lovely film.
I have to say, yesterday, and not a movie I got to be part of, but a movie that does the same for me, showed my kids, which I've been wanting them to see, a film in that same way because I felt that it would remind them, despite, like October Sky, the parents you're given, or the school you're given, or the circumstances you're given, that you alone can still... know who you are and know your worth and find your voice in the world. So I showed them Whale Rider. Oh, my God. What an incredible gift to watch then with your kids. They were so moved by it.
I'm glad to hear that. How old are your kids now?
11 and 14.
Oh, it's perfect age to show them that. Yeah.
It was really powerful to watch. I also just showed them Captain Fantastic.
Oh,
I love that movie.
What a good movie.
I haven't seen it.
Yes.
He's so good in it.
He is our subsequent guest on this podcast.
Yes. Coming in after you.
Viggo is coming here, yes.
I'm obsessed with his performance. I've seen it three times.
It's so good.
He's incredible.
You just believe him. You absolutely believe him.
He's so amazing.
Yeah.
And the movie is so important for this specific generation that are locked to a device the majority of their day.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it's incredible for them to to consider alternatives.
Yeah.
I'm looking up because – so it's George MacKay. That's who plays the eldest son. And when I saw the movie, I thought – first of all, I kind of thought he was British because I'm pretty good at hearing it. But also I get – there's just a way about certain people where you go, you're not American. You're something else. And he is, in fact, British, and he has studied classical – you know, Shakespeare and everything else. And he is a musician in real life. And he's, I mean, because he's so good. To stand up to Viggo Mortensen, I mean, anybody to be able to do that would take a lot. You'd have to be a really strong, like you say, brave. You'd have to be very brave and very real and very raw, because he is all those things all the time. You know, there are certain actors that you just get excited to see. You're excited to see what they're going to do because they're not only interesting, they also make really fantastic choices.
And that's
what's great about, you know, you said at the very beginning with a film critic, something that I've learned from my dad is to take everything, is to appreciate. So in Captain Fantastic, I love costume design. I love everything they're wearing throughout that film.
Yeah. Courtney Hoffman, who's amazing. Just first time directed her first short film that I starred in.
Oh, really?
I think she's so brilliant.
That's so great.
She's really awesome.
I mean, the look of that film, the feel of that film, and then Matt Ross, who people only really know from television, to write that and direct that. It's a knockout.
Now let me ask you, you must have gotten, I'm assuming, and I hope I'm not assuming wrong, you must have gotten a lot of feedback from young people who may have seen you in The Fault in Our Stars.
Yes.
Oy.
Another film that maybe 11 and 12 is a little young, but I would think tweens would respond very strongly.
On the airplane, bawling my eyes out.
Yeah, I know.
Bawling my eyes out. Why am I doing this to myself?
Sure.
And that's not just a conventional mom role, because there's a lot more going on there.
And for a lot of parents, I mean, it felt honestly like the Ellen episode. A lot of people who've dealt with the challenge of cancer in their family sort of really were grateful. And we got to do a lot of fundraising and meet a lot of people who are in the middle of the crisis.
And working with another impressive young talent, Shailene Woodley.
Yes, who's become one of my dearest friends in the world. And
you too.
Oh, my God, we love each other.
You too.
She's lived in my house for months
of course
at a time.
She has. With her one tiny suitcase.
Exactly.
Eating her clay.
Exactly.
And of course she has.
In her mason jar.
Exactly.
And then we just worked together again on an HBO limited series that'll come out in February, I think.
Called
Big Little Lies, also based on a book. And it should be a lot of fun. It's Shailene, myself, Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, and Zoe Kravitz.
It's just so sad you can't work with good people. It's funny to look through your filmography and look at the people you've worked with director-wise, which is crazy because you've worked with, I mean, the top of the top, the best people, and a lot of directors who are actors, people that actors go, I would really love to work with this person. And then you've worked with actor-wise, everyone, just young, old, everything.
But I want to ask you something. I've never asked you about this person, and because he's so, it's kind of the elephant in the room because he's so obvious to talk about. But it's not the person people would talk to you about right away. Tell us about working with Steven Spielberg.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
he's amazing, and people don't ask me enough about that experience because. It's so similar to working with David Lynch, I can't tell you.
Wow.
And that's the thing that I think somehow that Steven's been coined a traditionalist because the movies are so successful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Close Encounters is insane.
Yeah.
It's so brave. It's so radical. The film, he's so radical that he's invented a style that's so specifically his, and that, you know, it's the one other than David, it's the one director I've worked with where people will come up to me on the street and kind of describe a shot or go, oh my God, that scene where you're like, and then we see you see the dinosaurs for the first time, but they're like copying
the camera
move because it's so iconic.
Oh, wow.
That I think is so beautiful. But he's hysterical, very irreverent, loyal and generous to the people he works with. And it's one of the most profound experiences of my life, not only because he became family and has remained such, his whole family is my family and the kids have grown up together and everything.
Wow.
But we went through a hurricane on that movie early on. And
we're talking about Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park. I had Hurricane Iniki on the island of Kauai in Hawaii was hit devastatingly. So we went through that whole experience together and it was very bonding. And mm-hmm. so for the whole rest of the movie, we were really close in a very different kind of way than a typical movie. But also, he likes to improvise. And, you know, interestingly, the character is like maybe more of a feminist as a female lead in an action movie than we've seen 15 years later.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's kind of funny. I mean, she's always the smartest person in the room and kind of sassing the boys.
Yeah.
And that's some very good one-liners.
It's incredible with that movie. It's incredible that almost any – I find especially with boys, more even than girls, it's their favorite thing.
Right. Oh,
and
yeah.
My husband, the fact that I know you makes me so cool to him. And, you know, and this weekend they just showed Royal Albert Hall because there's that tour of the Jurassic Park with a live orchestra.
Oh, my God.
And all of my friends from all over the UK were there in London to go see it. And people have said it's the best experience they've ever had. I mean, because they don't have the Hollywood Bowl.
Right.
Here at the Hollywood Bowl, for anyone who doesn't know, they do a lot of screenings where they'll show a movie and have a live orchestra, which is so exciting.
But this is now really catching on around the world.
Yeah, which is wonderful because we support live music. But at Royal Albert Hall, you know, this movie and the photos are hysterical because they're in like the opera boxes.
Oh, my God.
People
amazing.
Are in all the, I mean, it's a huge, gorgeous place and they're watching Jurassic Park and there's a full orchestra there. And it's just it's a knockout. But that, you know, you're a part of something that everyone knows.
Oh, that's
everyone
so
knows.
And what's funny, too, you given know? That they did a recent and very good Jurassic Park sequel.
Yes.
After a long, long spell.
Yeah.
That when they did the new one, of course, it's, I think, pretty much all done with computer graphics.
Mm-hmm.
But when you made your Jurassic Park, Stan Winston, may he rest his soul.
Yes, genius.
Built actual, what do you call them, puppets?
Well, yeah,
I guess
something.
You call them
puppets, animatronics.
Creatures,
yes.
Well,
there's a one story that always comes up, and it's that one of them would go on its own, one of the really, really big T-Rexes. I always read this, that it would just on occasion just kind of go, randomly and scare the crap out of everyone. And I can't even imagine.
I can't even imagine.
But, so you were really interacting.
Oh, yeah.
Not with a ping pong ball against a green screen.
Oh, no. We had a couple of sequences were absolutely the animal. I mean, the Triceratops, who's sick, that I try to help, is one of his puppets. And it's the most incredible thing ever. I mean, it made Sam Neill and I cry. It was so beautiful. And its eyes were so soulful.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It was really beautiful. The raptors also were some of Stan Winston's incredible work, and that was just terrifying.
You can say you worked with raptors.
Oh, yes, I did.
You worked with raptors.
And they may have had a couple of puppeteers inside that head, but when that thing came at me, I was freaking out.
Oh, I can't.
Wow. There was no acting present.
Wow, wow.
So fun.
How interesting to have that experience.
Yeah, it was so great.
You've really covered the map, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you're far from done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited.
We're at the midpoint of your career.
Yeah.
But you have had a lifetime of experiences.
Yeah.
I'm and
really
interesting
lucky.
Ones. Spanning, and again, because things keep changing so much, I think all movie historians are going to have to divide films, or film as we know it, into two eras, the pre-CGI era.
Yeah.
The post-CGI era. I mean, things have changed.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed for indie movies. Hasn't changed for Kelly Reichardt.
That's right.
But it has for mainstream movies, to be sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just – and you've seen that change. You've been witness to and participant in that change. And you grew up with parents who were in an earlier – not era – but an earlier part of show business because mm-hmm. of episodic television
yeah. mm-hmm.
and the indie features, the Roger Corman era
yeah.
of indie features. Is that true, by the way? Is it true that you were in your mama's
oh, yeah.
belly while she was riding a bike for a Roger Corman biker movie?
Yes. I mean, it was, they believe that it is Roger who created or facilitated the conception because they were saying, like, I don't know, there was some issue with the egg, and they think that it was the shaking of the motorcycle that made the, like, egg make it through. So
whatever works.
He
whatever
takes responsibility works. for my existence.
Oh, my God.
Which I'm very proud of.
And then cast your mom in Carnosaur.
Oh, my God. It's so
while
amazing.
You were doing Jurassic Park. I mean, Roger Corman has had more impact on more lives.
Oh, my God.
In more different
oh.
ways.
Oh, my God.
Than anyone can
editors,
imagine.
Assistant directors.
Sure, sure.
I mean, just amazing.
So how do you explain your family to your kids in terms of film? I mean, also, Laura was married to Ben Harper, who's an incredible musician. Incredible musician. So your kids have one of the most talented people around today as a father. And you miraculous being, as a mother. And then they have grandparents who also were a part and continue to be a part of this wacky show business world.
And their father's mother, their grandmother on his side, is an amazing singer-songwriter and beautiful musician.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's and his father was as well. So it's music all the way around on that side and acting on this side. And, you know, I guess the fun of them discovering.
Yeah.
Their family eventually, yeah. slowly. as my favorite story, we had Christmas. We see David Lynch and his family for Christmas, and Ellery, he was teaching Ellery to make a cappuccino.
Standard,
as you do. And Ellery goes, so David, when can I see the movies my mom's made with you? And he was like, well, what do you want to see? Like, what movie? And he was like, well, what about this movie Wild at Heart?
Mm-mm.
And he goes, you can see that when you're 30.
Right.
and he goes, why is my mom really like racy in it or something? And he goes, oh, Ellery, it's not your mom I'm worried about. It's you seeing your grandmother that I'm worried about. And then it suddenly hit me like, oh, my God, the things that my parents have done.
Oh, yeah.
From my mom in Wild at Heart to my dad killing John Wayne, you got to go slow.
Yeah.
Grandma and grandpa are rascals.
Oh, man.
So they've seen, I mean, they saw Nebraska yeah. and they've seen more current things my parents
yeah,
have
yeah,
done.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Well, someday, well, they have a world of discovery awaiting them.
Yeah. They do. It's
they
wild.
Sure do.
Yeah.
And we are going to send you on. We don't like to do any baloney here on the show. We have to send Laura on her way to pick up her kids from school.
Yep. Yes.
Because she's a responsible working mom.
Yes. That's it, guys.
So that's why we're saying goodbye now. We could talk to you for hours.
I'm yes. so thrilled, too.
But,
and this
now,
is the greatest duo in the universe. as they won't tell you, but Leonard and Jesse know, I grab them at every film festival. We ride on airplanes together, which is
do.
How Jesse and I first bonded. I find Leonard to ask what I should see, how I should think, what I should feel at every movie. And we break bread and have meals, and it's always such an honor and privilege to be with you guys.
It's our honor and privilege and pleasure.
Yes.
And I hope you've enjoyed listening. We are you a social media person?
Learning to be.
All right, so fine. We don't
my
need
children
to,
are teaching.
Don't need
me.
To promote anything then along those lines.
No.
All right, well then we'll do that.
Yeah.
Because you can find me on Twitter at Leonard Maltin. And you can go to my website, which is leonardmaltin.com, where I write not just new movie reviews, but I write about DVDs and film festivals and events and interesting people that I have seen. And I hope you will enjoy it at leonardmaltin.com. And with that, we say thank you, Laura.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you for being with us. And we hope you folks will join us again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.